Welcome to the River of Suck podcast. Friends, we are here live at Fiddle Hell, Westford, Massachusetts. This is being recorded November 6th, 2022. But if you're listening in the future, it may be a different day. So hi from the past and let us know how the future is. I have a very special guest today, my friend Jason Anik, who I've known since I was zero.
This is true. It's good to be here, Andy.
Our friendship has progressed from, I suppose, a minute ago you brought up that as a little child, I had a bite.
Yeah. You've been known to bite off more than you could chew. Oh. Yes.
Oh.
No. Yeah, we've known each other forever, and it's so good to be back here at Fiddle Hell. It's always kind of just been like a family reunion, because that's one of the things that our families would always do is get together over the years, play music, share stories, share bad puns.
Especially the bad puns.
Yeah. there's a lot of bad puns, but amazing music to be had.
Yeah. So our parents were friends and roommates and bandmates. And so here we are. Musicians playing the fiddle. Apparently it worked.
The next generation, yeah.
The next generation. We are here. We are playing fiddles, and life is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's really fun to have grown up in an environment where we were exposed to so many different musical styles, and it was like encouraged to improvise and jam and to come up with twin parts and do all these things. And it was a really creative environment to grow up in, you know, both in our separate households, but when we got together, it just amplified.
That's right. And we did win some twin fiddle contests together.
Mm-hmm. We did. What year was that first one? Do you remember? We were little.
I remember what happens, not when it happens.
Yeah.
I'll just being honest here.
Yeah, I know.
I know that it happened and that we were both shorter.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, so we were a lot shorter back then, and we worked up some really cool twin parts.
We did, and our parents also helped us work them up.
We had some help. We had some help.
I believe at first it was you play this, and then you'll play this.
It could have gone that way. And then we did it and looked all adorable.
That's right.
Being so little. And
there's nothing like short little kids playing fiddles together. Well, so, you know, we are here at Fiddle Hell, and a lot of our friends here at Fiddle Hell know who you are. They know that you're a specialist in jazz fiddle. But why don't you tell us, listeners in the podcast audio universe, who is Jason Anik? And let me add one more thing to who is Jason Anik. What makes you feel like the youest you, the most Jason of Jasons?
That is hard. Well, I think one of the things is definitely that my upbringing, kind of a unique upbringing of so many different styles, whether learning fiddle tunes by ear, like I said, like our families, my dad, you know, Peter, he would teach us fiddle tunes by ear. And then I also got classical training early on, and then was really started to get into like Django's music, because my dad also was into it and introduced me to it, even took me to see Stefan Grappelli perform when I was young. So I was exposed to it. And this was actually before YouTube and before Spotify and all that. So you really just had to have a parent who could expose you to these things. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky that he was really interested in the style and exposed me to it at an early age. And so between all these different genres that kind of kept I was being exposed to, along with my brother was studying a saxophone, and he had this Charlie Parker's Greatest Hits album, and eventually I got my hands on that, and there was something that clicked when I heard that album as well. I just loved I love this idea of like kind of a Charlie Parker-esque improvisation on the violin. It didn't seem like there were that many people doing it. And so that's something that excited me, because I really fell in love with improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's like composing real time. I also love composing, but improvisation is when I feel like I'm the meest me is when I'm improvising, because all my life's experience, all the things I've worked on and learned, and even like how I'm feeling in the moment, how my day went, how this month went, and personal stuff, and it all goes into every moment because it can be very organic. And so I think all my upbringing brought me into a path of like being an improvising musician and genres that really I felt like I could be myself within, like an improviser. And that brought me to like the Django and the Gypsy Jazz style, because, you know, I fell in love with that. And also violin fits in so nice. I love acoustic violin and acoustic instrument and guitar. And I also took like the classical, I kept continuing the classical, and I loved the classical sound. I listen to a lot of classical violinists, and there's a little classical leaning in that genre as well. So it kind of, this encompasses like all my loves, like the instrument, the voice of the instrument, the challenges that the instrument brings, and I love the challenges. I like the challenges.
The suffering,
yes, heading to the that river.
It is the river of suck. So yes, we are going to talk about suffering.
Absolutely. But, yeah. But. It is a challenging instrument, but this culmination of all these different genres I learned and my interests and the ability to like just be fully myself when I'm playing, like I escape when I'm improvising on stage. Like I'm with the band, we're on the same wavelength, but like I bring the audience in. It's not like I'm ignoring it, but I'm in a different space. I try to tap into a different headspace and a total different zone. And I love that. And that's when I feel like I'm the meest me as far as like music goes.
Do you think the Jason Anik that's on stage, how does that character relate to the Jason Anik that's off stage?
Yeah,
are they different?
I would say there's a lot of things similar, because I definitely try to play. I bring myself to every note and every phrase and every song I'm playing is my personality. I would say that there's also things I feel like I could explore. Like a good director could explore all sorts of different types of movies without having like, when through that experience discovers new things. So, I mean, I try to reach some depths in like playing a ballad, and I'm lucky I've had I've experienced loss and suffering, but not like other people. So I try to tap into certain aspects of the world, and some of just like a painter or other artists. And so I think there's a lot of me as far as just this, like, let's say at the core, it's me. But then I really try, because I love all the different colors, and I love playing ballads. I love playing things that are complex and everything. And I can't always draw on personal experiences for like the depth I'm trying to go to in like some of this like heart-wrenching passionate gypsy music, but I really want to do it. And so I try to find those experiences. So I'd say like, yeah, definitely play my personality, but try to reach for different experiences, things I've seen, things I've read, or through experiences with other people and just the world, and try to bring that into my music.
Cool. So if someone was going to see you on stage, it's probably with Rhythm Future Quartet or the Jason Anik Trio. Is that right?
Yeah. Those have definitely been the main projects under my own name. Also play with a great pianist, Jason Yeager, and we're gearing up for a kind of more contemporary jazz album. We did one already together, so it's fun. Every project explores a different color palette and different situation of like how the violin can fit and how my voice can fit into these different ensembles. It's always fun to explore.
Totally. And just so we're clear, can you explain what gypsy jazz is compared to contemporary jazz?
Yeah, absolutely. So the style gypsy jazz, or in French more commonly jazz manouche, it's kind of first pioneered, and we how we know it is through a famous guitar player, Django Reinhardt, who heard what was going on in early jazz, like New Orleans jazz, and brought it to the guitar, and was a real virtuoso and super creative composer and writer, and kind of found this new way of exploring the instrument, and his great improviser, and brought it to guitar, partnered up with Stefan Grappelli, great French jazz violinist, and they had just a certain feeling and attitude to it, and there was definitely some ties to some Eastern European sounds being in France and being surrounded, like Django and other, there was other families of like tribes like Manouche, Sinti, Roma, and there's a lot of history of music that comes through these different tribes, like passed on from generation to generation, and so that lineage is there. And Django was also really into the classical composers like Ravel and Debussy. So it's an interesting combination of things. But really what inspired Django the most was early jazz, and then he kind of evolved from there.
Cool.
Yeah, and so they didn't call it Gypsy Jazz at first. That wasn't really its name. They called it, it was like, they just kind of called it Hot Club. It's like the Hot Club of France was they had this venue that they played, Hot Club. So a lot of times they were calling it Hot Jazz, or they would just call it swing, right? So sometimes they would just call it swing. But later on, like, you know, trying to label it, and because there has been this huge history of people from that culture that have carried it on, carried it past Django, and then passed it on and shared around the world, you know, it's nice to bring it back to them and pay tribute to it. And there's so many virtuosos around Europe that play this, like, you could, there'll be like 10 playing guitar. They can barely hold it, but they're shredding on it. And so it's an incredible.
10 years old, not 10 guitar players. No, yeah. 10-year-old guitar players who are virtuosos.
Yeah, yeah. And they just kind of sit around the campfire and they learn it by, you know, by ear. And they, but I've been lucky enough to, like I said, my dad really was into this as well. He was into swing. That got him into discovering Django and trying it out. And then we kind of tried it out together. And then another thing that was lucky was growing up near a camp called Django in June, which brought all these great players from Europe and all around the U.S.
Where is that?
It's in Northampton. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So, you know, it would have been hard to see this music, to find it without traveling to Europe, but it started to come to the U.S. at the perfect time.
Here in Massachusetts.
Yes, right here in Massachusetts. And it was a great opportunity to meet like people that do it authentically, and really for me to try to like to really do it right.
Cool. I guess it's different in real life versus just hearing the record. We can see the people, can see their faces, see their expression.
I'm sure with you, it's the same thing. Like you've heard some recordings, and then when you got to see it live, whether it's at Fiddle Camp, your hero, and it's like, oh my, it's actually a person creating this style and doing it for real. It's kind of incredible to see it live. Yeah, absolutely. And then to see it live, but then to join a jam session live and like try to hack your way through it, but like feel welcomed. That's really, really amazing feeling as well.
And that's also part of why this moment right now is so special, when we haven't even had Fiddle Hell in person in real life since 2019, so that's 3 years ago.
I know.
So we're sort of rejoining the jam and rediscovering what it means to play music with other people in the same room all together. There's people who've played jams this weekend who stayed up late who I don't think have jammed at all.
For years.
For several years, yeah.
Yeah, no.
So feel the power of music.
Absolutely. It's such a... The camaraderie, you can see how everyone's beaming. I mean, everyone's exhausted by today, but everyone's beaming. Everyone's they're in information overload in the best way from all the stuff they've learned, but it was a homecoming for so many people. And that's so exciting to see. And that's what music brings people together, really.
Totally. Well, let's talk about the challenges and the struggle, which brings us to the River of Suck.
It's a big river.
It is a big river. It can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, You are standing on one side of the River of Suck. Behind you is your comfort cave. You're on your comfort shore. You're in your comfort zone. All the things you already know how to do. Easy. No problem. On the other side of the River of Suck, we can see little tiny versions of ourselves who can do the things that we wish we could do now. And they're tiny because they're far away. It seems impossible. It seems like they're not even us, but it's actually future us. The problem is in between us and our goals, our future selves, there is a raging River of Suck filled with whitewater rapids, rocks, currents, and thought piranhas. Very devastating, the thought piranhas. They're trying to help you. It's some old part of the lizard brain, and it, for some reason, always wants to tell us we're not good enough, we don't belong here. All these negative things, and they're just swimming around in our brains, whispering sweet, terrible things into our ears when we're trying to play music, we're trying to be with friends, anything. It can happen anytime. So the point of the analogy, which comes from John McGann, is that if we take small little steps every day in our practice time and in our lives, we can reach those goals that seem so far away and so impossible. But there's no magic bridge to the other side. You have to swim, get bashed on the rocks, you know, cut your feet on a sharp one you didn't even see coming, and get bitten by the thought piranhas and really struggle. I think progress really comes through the struggle. And whereas a lot of people just want to be better at something right now, you know, this is one of the reasons we have a whole weekend filled with workshops that we're here, because it takes time and it takes effort and it takes energy to learn the things that are going to make us feel more like ourselves. So that's the River of Suck. We can get there with little steps. You could build a raft with your practice time. I learned about the practice diamond from Matt Glazer when I was at Berkeley, which is the place that you now teach. Mm-hmm. You're a professor. And it's interesting. The practice diamond is sort of raft-shaped. Yeah. And that'll let you identify your goals, and even naming them and knowing that I'm going to spend time on this every day. And it doesn't have to be my whole day, but I'm going to take a little step. So that's the theory, is if you do it consistently, you can reach those goals that feel impossible. So does that make sense? Do you see the River of Suck in your music, in your life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is something, and everyone has different, with either analogies or metaphors to describe, you know, these types of these things. I mean, one thing that is good about like what you're doing and just talking about it is that it's an equalizer. Like, we're all in this together. We all have journeys, but we all have these things that are internal that sometimes aren't even external. Sometimes they could be external as far as like certain, you know, challenges we have. But I just think it's so important for people listening who are struggling that, like, at every level we have, like, we experience these things. And it's such an important thing, like what you're doing and talking about it and getting different perspectives. It's so important. So I just want to say that's awesome. So for me, like, some of the things, like a couple of my, the way, like, to me, like, the River Suck has also, I sometimes reframe things. Reframing has been something that's really good for me, especially for those thought piranhas.
Mm-hmm.
So here are some things that I've discovered that have, like, helped me get to the other side. One would be thinking about, like, growing up playing some video games, like, you know, our generation played video games.
Yep.
And the most fun games and levels were the hardest, the ones that we just kept dying.
Yeah.
And then
over and over.
Oh, we kept dying over and over again, but we persisted because it was the challenge. And and new discoveries and new ways of thinking about it and doing it that actually unlocks a new level. Mm-hmm. And so I come back to that with music, is thinking about it that, and so that's one way that I've been able to connect with people and connect with myself and to think about it is reframing it as like this, as a video game, and remembering like, oh, some of the hardest, most challenging things can be the most rewarding, and you can enjoy the process too. And that's another reframing, is like actually like when we're bad at something and work on it, and just having these moments of like actually breaking through a new technique, or whether it's something like, I remember having these like little revelations or breakthroughs, like whether it be like a couple months and I discover something.
Yeah.
And you'd have these moments where I was like, I remember like setting these goals and it was really tough. And there's definitely those moments where you're just like, I just don't think I'll ever get past a certain, whether it's a technical thing, or it's like trying to always be in rhythm or always be in tune or just like the tone I want, or but I would remember, just like, I remember thinking back to like video games and like that journey, and like how much, like trying to dedicate that kind of time and energy and like discoveries, thinking, rethinking things, and thinking about like unlocking of levels as a way of like, yeah, there's going to be those kind of deaths.
You've reached level 7 violin.
Yeah. And then the cool thing about it is it's a video game that doesn't end, which is awesome too. Because like, I remember you'd beat a video game and you'd be like, oh, well, it's over. Aw. But this video game doesn't end. Just you, like, and it's more like almost like an RPG where you're like, your stats go up, but also you meet new people in new worlds. But it never ends in a good way. And that's the thing. It's like, we're always working towards things, but I think it is super valuable to appreciate, look back, appreciate different phases, little revelations we had, breakthroughs, mm-hmm. our different phases. Cause that's good when we're in our current, like when we're like back in the river suck, we can think back to like the past rivers that we made it through, and, remember that feeling of like, oh yeah, it was all worth it. It was worth it. And then it opened up this opportunity, and then it brought me these new musical friends, and then I got to travel, like all the different things that it has opened up. It makes all that work worth it. So that's one thing. The other thing I love to tell my students is, especially when they're starting improvisation, because that feels like this mountain to them.
Right.
You know, and that's, so I love this analogy of just a mountain that doesn't end. So as you climb, like enjoy the views, enjoy the vistas, and as you join it, it's a really good thing. Like there's no end in sight, so it doesn't matter that there isn't an end, so you don't have to think about that, and you actually then can appreciate each moment
right
as you're climbing, and kind of be like, oh wow, the view's pretty good. Or then you can also say, wow, I've been climbing a lot, like I'm way farther up.
Yeah,
so I like that one too, and that just clicks with me, like. And I pass that on, those things on to my students. So
you brought up the thing that I forgot, which is that the process is messy, and you have to be doing it essentially poorly before you can be doing it well. And that moment of not sounding good, of sounding bad, is really hard. So I like the idea of being partway up a mountain and noticing how cool the view is, even from here at this moment when we're still struggling, and we see how much further we have to go, and it seems like we'll never get there.
Yeah.
But if you can't find some level of enjoyment in that moment, then that process is gonna suck.
Yeah, and also, once you accept that there's no top to the mountain,
right?
Then the mountain, like climbing the mountain, is the goal. And that's the thing. So like, then those moments of each phase of like where you're at in your personal journey. And that's the other thing to remember. I think the one thing that we often do, and it can even happen at a camp like this, is like, you start to compare yourself to your peers. You're at a jam session. You're like, oh, this person's way better. These things are real. That's like a classic thought piranha that I used to have.
Right.
You know, you'd go to these camps, and I realized, like this, I talk about reframing or perspective. Instead of saying like, like I was re-listening to some of the podcasts. Like I was listening to the Billy Contreras one on my drive this morning, and he was somebody that we were both like, what is he doing? Like, we're only 12. We shouldn't be like this. And so I remember wrestling with that and being like, well, if somebody's so much further ahead, how is it possible to ever catch up? And then I remember two things. Like, one is it's a personal journey that you do with a lot of people. So it's a collective journey that is personalized. So in other words, you play music with other people, but your own growth is your own growth, and it's very personal and really important. The other thing is nobody can be your collection of experiences. So
that's right.
If you play with your own personality, no one will ever sound like you. So that's another thing. It's like, oh, finding what it means, what is the USU, like you said, is finding that. And that was, for me, like finding my me as me was like, oh, I just need to keep harnessing that, find what is me, and like keep growing there. And that's a personalized journey. And then it doesn't really matter to compare to other people. And then the other is reframing the situation. And instead of thinking, oh my God, like I'll never be as good as this Billy Contreras, I reframe it and say, oh my God, I get to hang out with Billy Contreras. Yeah. It's a reframing. But my perspective is like, wow, I can hang out and learn, absorb, instead of being like, now it's a negative thing of like, oh, he knows these songs, I don't know, or this or that.
And who is better? Who can play more notes faster and
cleaner?
None of
that even matters. It's all about like, how can we learn from each other? And within our personalized journey, how can the people that we meet inspire us and teach us something? And that perspective has been something that it's work. It's hard.
So like bluegrass, especially, and I think jazz, especially have a competitive feeling to them that I think you're alluding to that stems from like, because you're exploring improvisation and you're coming up with new things, it's like, who can be the most virtuoso spontaneously? And that's actually a pretty tall order, and people do get competitive about it. So
I mean, I even did a competition.
Yeah, that's right.
I literally was in a finalist of a jazz violin competition, and I didn't place. And that's one of those things, like you have these things that happen, and like you could either be like, well, I'm not as good, or you could make it as a learning experience. And I made it as a learning experience and appreciated all the people I'd met and the journey along the way. And then it's also like I'm playing music for me and to share with other people. So like for me, it's like I just love to continue to grow and explore what is possible as an improviser, like just more melodic, more like take it in new places, surprise myself. I love surprising myself when I'm improvising. Like, where the heck did that come from? Those are the moments I love.
Yeah.
That's when I'm in the moment. I'm like, okay, I could maybe trace it back to all these exercises I did, but didn't expect it to come out that way. I love those moments. And so I'm always chasing those. And also, like when you forget to perform for other people, and all you need is one person to be like, that really touched me, that was meaningful. And then you're like, bam, okay. Like, it's not about like this person versus this person versus this person. It's like,
who's better?
Your growth.
Yeah.
And you giving something to people. And people, and then at the end of the day, like, better is so subjective. One person's virtuoso is another person's like, I'm not interested. And there's something for everybody. If you're a performer, there's so much you can give if you, like you said, find your me-est me, your USU. Like find what you have to give as an artist. And that's what I've always been focused on.
Yeah, so finding joy in the struggle, finding something to hold on to when things are hard.
Yeah.
I also feel like that's when the community comes in. If you sort of think of it as yourself versus everybody, that is a different challenge from I have support, I have friends who believe in me and are going to scrape me off on the from the floor when I feel like everything is impossible.
Yeah, and just having like gratitude for the other people that you get to be around and learn from. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah. So I am a collector of struggle stories on this podcast. I love hearing about when things just went totally wrong and you're still here and you learned from it. Can you think of any moments that you're willing to share where you fell flat on your face in public or...
Oh, man. Well, let's see. That's a good one.
Because it's all fun in, when it's hypothetical, but it's even more fun when we hear, like, what mortified you? And I know that's a really personal question, but this is a podcast where we talk about our feelings and try to learn from them. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, right, there's got to be stuff that happened. Maybe I've, like, just forgot about it. Or maybe I, like, yeah, just...
Or maybe your persistent positive attitude is saving you from melting, like, into a puddle.
There's so many different ways of looking at everything, right? So one, you could go into a situation where you feel underprepared, and I've definitely felt those. But I also then just, again, flipped the perspective and said more of, like, oh, I'm just honored to be here, and I'm going to give it my best, you know. In those types of situations where, let's say, I was thrown into a jam session or an audition or something, and it just – nerves start to get up on you, but then I'm able to kind of talk my way out of it and just try to be the best me I can be. I mean, I think the jazz violin competition and not placing was kind of tough. I think it's hard, you know, when you do, like, you get whether you get, like, some accolades or praise in the genre, and then it's impossible not to compare yourself.
Then you're assigned
yourself
a number.
Yeah, then you're assigned a number. Like, I mean, there was like 10 finalists, so I was in the top 10 finalists. And yeah, that was tough. It's like, you know, seeing everyone else perform. I will say, like, some things didn't go as well as I had hoped, and so there were definitely some things that definitely went awry over there, like some of the arrangements I had, like the band that was playing with me. It just didn't happen. I wasn't able to kind of get in the zone I wanted to musically. But yeah, those are tough moments. But you have to always say, okay, like, it was a great experience to do the competition, and like learning the music for that was great, and all the people I met. And so I was able to find a good perspective on that as well. But yeah, it's definitely a shock. I mean, when you do a competition, especially when you're that was a competition where, like, we're all professionals now. So it's not like you're just a teenager. It's like, whatever, you
went in ready to win.
Yeah, like, you got to bring it, you know? It's like, I'm a professor at Berkeley, and like, these people would be like, oh, I beat this Berkeley professor. I must be better than him. So there's no way you're not going to think that, right? There's no way you're not going to have that perspective. But I think it reminded me, everyone was so different in the competition. So I was like, I don't know how these judges are going to judge this. I felt bad for the judges. It's like, how could you possibly pick? And I could feel the tension in the room, because they knew, like, everyone in the room was such good players. And so they're like, we have to actually pick people. It was tough. And pick them. And then, like, we're all still hanging out together. And it was a very intense experience, but very valuable to do. And definitely like a good one to reflect upon and grow from, and
yeah,
and just continue to, you can either reevaluate things and say, huh, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was, or you can say, like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and keep growing, and I'll watch my performance. Maybe there's things I missed, and there's constructive criticism, like actually growing from and watching yourself. And I will say this, I record myself a lot. Like, there's thousands of voice memos of me practicing. I record almost every time I practice, I record something.
Right.
And then I like listen back on a practice break, and I say, like, almost like, okay, if I was this person's teacher, what would I say to them in a positive way? And that's been really helpful. And the more you do that, yeah, the more it just becomes second nature. And you're like, you know, you can take criticism, you can take growth, like, and it's like practicing criticism.
Yeah, a weakness in your music or even your personality is not necessarily the end of the world. It is something that can be thought about and dealt with and practiced. So sounds to me like you're sort of a master of taking negative energy and finding the positivity in it. Is that true?
I feel like I've definitely... I mean,
Have you always been like this?
I don't know. I don't think so. No.
We have a father in the crowd.
No, he says no. I had to really work on it. I really did, because I used to really like early phases. I was not good at criticism, definitely not. So this was definitely something that I worked on.
And can we be more specific? Like, what happens? You know, what changed?
Oh, I think it would
What's a previous Jason?
Well, previous Jason would be reaction? More like probably more like shut down, right? Shut down a little bit and not listen to like what is being said, because like I can figure it out myself. I can do it myself. Like, I'll figure it
don't
out.
Do,
like,
don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me what to do. You know, it was a little harder to just take criticism. And maybe I was just like a little more sensitive and took things more personally, or had a hard time like understanding, and like I didn't have as much good like skills of like perspective and those type of skills. I hadn't developed them. I feel like I developed them later, a little later, maybe in college. But yeah, I don't think I was always like that.
Do you have any good stories, Pete?
Oh, gee. Yeah, my dad's here.
Do you have any
my first teacher's here. As somebody who's seen me in all the phases.
Yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. I hope I'm not embarrassing Jason, but this is the River of Suck.
This is Pete Anik.
But anyway, he was in like either kindergarten or preschool or something, and they had their first, you know, like Christmas performance when they're all going to come out and, you know, sing and do their little things. And we were sitting there, I had the video camera all ready to go, you know, we were all excited. And so all the little kids come up on stage, and Jason takes a look, you know, he comes up, takes his place, and he takes a look at the audience out there. He bursts into tears.
Oh, yeah.
And he couldn't go on.
Oh,
and
man.
I think they had to, you know, give
everyone's like, that's going to be the performer.
It's like
the guy who's balls and has the lead.
Right. So I think one of the things, so he's the least person we would have expected to ever be a performer. And as a kid, he was very shy. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you see him now, he's very outgoing and all. But as a youngster, he was a very shy kid. And you know, remember saying, oh, go ahead and meet so-and-so or this and that. And you were like, oh, I don't know.
I'm uncomfortable with that. You have to push me a little bit into certain settings.
Yeah.
I was thankful after, but yeah, it was, I was always a little reticent.
And practicing. It's funny that he talks about how much he practices now, because when he was young, he hated to practice. And
what five-year-old doesn't?
Yeah, I guess most of them do. And actually, to his credit, I'm surprised that he stayed with it as long as he did.
Wow. Yeah.
Because he did not like to practice. He liked to play around on the violin. He liked to do his own thing. But as far as, you know, his teacher saying, this is what you want to work on for next week, he had a hard time focusing on that.
Stubborn.
And finally, I had to set up a little, what do they call it, an egg timer. And we, for our half hour, and I'd set it for a half an hour and say, you know, as long as you're practicing, that'll count to your half an hour. But if you deviate from that and just go goofing around or whatever, then I'd stop the egg timer. And that's how he finally got him to practice. For whatever reason, he respected the egg timer.
Respected the timer, yeah. Yeah, no, that... to your credit, I mean, you pushed me those early phases to get me over that, my own kind of reluctance to want to do it. And once the floodgates opened, I couldn't put the instrument down. But yeah, there was like, I even I don't know, a lot of people have this moment where I almost quit playing altogether around 12, remember? There was that moment where I flat out was like, I mean, I was playing guitar. Like I was music was still there. I was like writing a lot of music on guitar. So I was like, I want to continue music. I'm really enjoying it. But violin, I was just a lost connection to it. And then I think the connection came back because I started to play with some of my friends and we started a band. And I was starting to write and improvise on the violin and discovering new things. And that opened up a lot. And that's kind of when the floodgates started to open a bit. But yeah, I was definitely reluctant at first.
So the lowest point led to those big
absolutely growths. Almost quitting. Yeah, almost quitting, you know, just straight up.
Yeah, I remember we tried to convince him, stay with it long enough so that if you decide to come back to it, you'll have the skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were twice you wanted to quit. Once was you were a lot younger, and we said, you know, a couple more years and you'll have the skills.
You're not allowed to quit.
Yes.
And the second time he was old enough to make his own decision, we said, okay, that's up to you now.
Sweet. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah. And then when I feel like when I did come back, it was like, it kind of felt like me again, even though we were playing a lot together. Like, we played a ton together once it started to peak on me. But yeah. Yeah, that's a little extra backstory there.
Trying to be a person, keeping it together, swimming through the brain fog, focusing on the goals you have set is never easy. Waking up every day feeling tired because you didn't get enough sleep, or even feeling tired when you did get enough sleep, makes it hard to follow through and concentrate on the hard work of swimming through the river of suck. I started drinking these little green shots called Magic Mind in the mornings, and I love them. They help me get in the right state of mind for a productive day. I feel way better in the mornings, and I'm happier throughout the day, thanks to adaptogens that boost your mind and help you relax. I had been buying healthy mushroom pills for immunity and mental performance, but I'd rather drink it alongside my one cup of coffee in the morning, which I roast from scratch, of course. It reduces my need for additional caffeine by making less caffeine do more and last longer. With ingredients like matcha, ashwagandha, lion's mane mushrooms, cordyceps mushrooms, and seeing how well it works for me, I would really encourage you to try it out as well. If you're having trouble feeling 100%, it's a total game changer. Now, I have a 20% off code to share with you guys, the River of Suck swim team. It is RIVER20, all caps, that's RIVER20. To use it, you go to magicmind.co/river and make it happen. This is also going to stack if you buy a subscription for up to 56% off the one-time purchase price. And Magic Mind has a money-back guarantee, so if you're not feeling it, no worries. Once again, that code is RIVER20, and the website is magicmind.co/river. You've been spending a lot of time working on a book called Violin Fingerboard Mastery. It seems like you are a very enthusiastic advocate for practicing and practice time and making that part of your routine to accomplish your goals. So I just wanted to give you the soapbox for how practicing can make your life better and your music.
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone has a different amount of time that they can practice, but once I discovered that practicing was to me like unlocking the ability of reaching new creative levels and playing opportunities, and just it was a lot more fun and it just like more personalized. I realized that like if I was gonna be the best improviser, I couldn't have like any sort of technical roadblocks hold me back. Like, because part of like improvisation, composing on the spot, is like you're instantly reacting. So if you have some sort of like snag in your bow, or like you don't know your fingerboard enough that you can just play. Some of the stuff that I really enjoyed practicing over the years were technical stuff, and from my classical teachers, especially ones at where I went to Hart Conservatory, great classical teacher who knew I wanted to be a jazz improviser, but like really helped me work on my technique and give me these exercise, these little etudes or things to get like really hyper focused on that. And I would just repeat. And it was tough. But when I'd hit a breakthrough and realized that it would like, oh, now I can do this in my improv, or now like this is not like a delay like it used to be. That was great. So I'd see these like relationships of working on a technique and then it having results in like my improv, or like, you know, ability to play certain pieces, or, you know, just opened up a lot of things. And then knowing the fingerboard, you know, everyone has a different relationship to
the
fingerboard.
What is mastery?
That's the thing. It's just a fancy word. It really, no one's really a master, because it's all, like I said before, there's no mastery would equate the top of the mountain. There is no top of the mountain.
Ooh.
So just mastery is basically, to me, is just constantly growing. You know, like becoming a master is like kind of just the constant growth, and so getting in control of that. And so I knew that there's so many things to discover, and I love to think about the fact that all music that's ever written on the violin is there.
That's right.
It's just there. And I'm like, wait, what? It's all just there. Anything that's ever been played on the violin is right there. So I'm like, I just need to discover that too. So like all the history of the instrument is there, right? It's kind of a crazy thing that like flipped in my, like I remember that. I'm like, oh my God, it's all there. I need to put my fingers where other people, like learning the history and like learning how other people have seen the instrument and developing a relationship with the fingerboard based on like what you hear and how it relates. Whether, like, if you're going to be somebody who's going to improvise, I think it's great to know chord progressions and be able to internalize them, and so you don't have to think about them.
Right.
A lot of people think that, like, learning chords is about just thinking. No, it's so you actually don't think. It's so you can be so comfortable with the song that you can think more multidimensional. Like, you can be doing a lot deeper things and then just, I'm playing on the chord tones, you know. All this stuff is a means to the end, right? So I love just discovering new things about the fingerboard, whether I compose something with it or I discover a kind of a harmonic way, or like ultimately now, like the fingerboard, I'm sure you too, the fingerboard lights up. Like if I'm thinking about a chord progression, like all the possibilities light up in this really cool way. I can see a fingerboard here and I can see like where my hand would go and what it'd sound like. And that took years and years to develop. And I'm still working on knowing like more of the region. But I'm always doing that. And that's actually something it's fun to discover on mandolin with frets.
Yep.
And I actually have a mandolin under my bed. I have an electric mandolin that lives under my bed. And, you know, many nights I would go to bed like and just practice fingerboard stuff before I went to bed. All these little exercises that I put in the book are things that I did and put through the paces, and I see the fingerboard totally different from like more of a blank slate, like I hope this is right where my finger's going, like in the really early days to like really having that confidence of like all the possibilities. So it's like technical, unlocking things from the technical side of things is like freedom to execute what you want. And then knowing the fingerboard harmonically is like being able to act on that in a way that's instantaneously. And then there's inspiration. Like you gotta be listening all the time and playing and writing. And so you need inspiration at the end of the day. You can't be just be a computer that does things like both technically.
It's gotta mean something.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the things that I'm boiling down. And I also, in the book, wanted to have like exercises that just people could work on in like 5 minutes a day, you know, just like 5-10 minutes a day. Just like take an exercise, see what it does for you. Because some people get overwhelmed with books and methods sometimes. And like, it's like, oh, I'll never have time to go through this whole thing. But it's like, you can just kind of cherry pick and find things that will work for you depending on where you're at and what your goals are. And so that was kind of what I wanted to set up.
You too can achieve mastery of the fingerboard with just one purchase of one book.
Purchase and a lot of spending a lot of time.
A lot of time. Cool. Get out your fiddle and
are we gonna play?
I think we need a little bit of that.
Yes, please.
It's
I think we need a little magic fiddle.
Yeah. We're gonna play one that Pete Anik wrote.
This is the Thanksgiving classic. It was a must every Thanksgiving. It pairs nicely with gravy.
That's right.
A little bit of
song
or
pairings.
Homebrew.
That's right.
Even better with homebrew.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh.
Thank you.
That was fun.
That was really fun. And
that was the abridged version. We could have gone another 10 hours.
That's right, the abridged version. So I want to thank you, Jason, for sitting down, talking about the uncomfortable feelings, not just into microphones, but in front of these beautiful fellow fiddlers. I know they're really intimidating. And you're also the first guest whose father stepped up to the mic to tell disturbing stories about their growth. So
about crying. My first performance was me bawling. So, I probably peed my pants too. I don't know. Who knows? I was a natural.
That's right. So, you know, thanks for being comfortable with the uncomfortability and being willing to talk about it. I really appreciate it. Where can we learn more about you? Is it jasonanik.com? What do you got coming up? What should we check out? What should we buy? Where do we hear your music? All that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a pleasure, Andy. I mean, thanks for having me. I love the podcast, and I think it's awesome. It's this great equalizer. We're all on this journey together and also on our own personal journeys, and no one is immune from, like, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all there. No one's immune. So I think it's awesome that you're doing this, getting different perspectives. And so it's like that. I got to give my two cents.
Yeah.
But, yeah, where can people find me? Yeah, jasonanik.com and YouTube. Magic Fiddle is a channel that I created with my dad, and we have posted lots of stuff over the years. I've a couple of my pandemic projects, since obviously wasn't touring as much, were, well, one, finishing this violin fingerboard mastery book. I wrote 12 solo violin pieces that I've been working on and trying to create a book there. And I did a series of transcriptions where I feel like I improvise just real. I try to be as melodic, interesting, intriguing improv that people can study in the little Sound Slice courses. I don't know. Have you checked out Sound Slice?
Sound Slice.
It's pretty cool. Like, it's a transcription thing that pairs like video or audio with the score, and like it goes by, and you can do a lot of fun. Slow it down and take sections. And anyway, so got some courses up there. That's all on the website. If
Instagram.
Yeah, I post a lot of actually. Yeah.
What's your handle? It's
just Jason Anik.
Jason Anik on Insta.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So on Instagram, I love, because I record and video so much of my practice, because just to like for myself to archive or to listen, or accountability.
So we can follow your journey on Instagram.
So sometimes I'll post stuff that I'm working journey. On. Cool. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, like, hey, this is what I practice. This is something I discovered. And sometimes I'll do that. Right now it's been a little trickier with the 16-month-old finding like those little. It's like. You know,
it's a whole new river of suck.
It's a whole new, yeah.
Enjoy.
It's a new, yeah. It's fun. It's fun. It's just a different journey. Time changes. The days change for sure. But yeah, like just most of the website or check out, like, I travel a decent amount with Rhythm Future Quartet, my gypsy jazz group.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said crossing the river of suck was easy or that you had to do it alone. So I want to thank you for tuning in and showing up live and giving it a chance. You can join the River of Suck Swim Team for just $1 a month at riverofsuckswimteam.com. Get all kinds of bonus content and support this podcast. Follow Jason Anik, jasonanik.com, on Insta, at Jason Anik. Follow his journey as he crosses the violin fingerboard mastery river along with you, especially if you buy the book. And thanks again for being here,
man. My pleasure.
Yeah, now we're gonna need a picture.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Jason Anik, live at Fiddle Hell in Westford, Massachusetts. I hope you had a blast, and let this be a warning to future guests with parents and a live audience. Don't forget, visit magicmind.co/river and use our special code RIVER20 for life-changing green shots. And in just a moment, this episode will continue with a bonus conversation. I've had help this fall from two students at CU Boulder through the English Department internship program. I thought it would be fun to finish out our time together with a ski day at Eldora, our local hill. Turns out both Trey and Sam are super fast and awesome skiers. And my wife, Dr. Joy Adams of Big Richard, joined us, and we had a great conversation to wrap up the semester on an incredibly slow chairlift.
What's up? It's the River of Sucks ski team.
Some say before you get good at something, you have to suck. Well, I don't suck at skiing.
Nice. One of the best things to ever happen to River of Suck podcast is a partnership with CU Boulder English Department. And this semester we had two interns, which is wild and amazing. We got Trey Fusell and we got Sam Vifquin. A lot of the social media content you've seen posted recently made by these amazing humans, and we really appreciate their efforts as they go on their own journeys through the college experience, but also get to dive deep into the River of Suck. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And this is the end of the semester. I said they should all get A's. So
we're at the River Delta.
Yeah.
It's a place where the river ends.
Sorry. No. It's great. I'm going to edit it. Shout out to Dr. Joy Adams from Big Richard for holding this camera on the chairlift, letting her fingers get cold as heck. Really what I want to know is, like, has doing this internship or have the concepts of the River of Suck changed the way that you look at things?
Totally. Yeah, so I think I always kind of knew in my heart that there was a River of Suck. I knew that not everything was going to be easy. And so, you know, when I heard Andy's philosophy on that, you know, the thought sort of came natural to me. But to have it spoken out loud kind of made me more aware of what I could be doing. Kind of just inspired me to just try, you know, not even try hard, just try.
Yeah. And honestly, same here. This has been a little bit more of a challenging semester. So having something where, you know, it really sort of allows you to become a little bit more introspective about things has been super rad. And I think just one thing that's always stuck with me, and I think is appropriate given the skiing conditions, is once you accept there's no top of the mountain, the goal becomes climbing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sick.
And, sweet.
There's a credit card down there. That guy's going through the River Suck.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But hey, you know, another, you know, to on that point, sometimes you do drop your credit card. or fumble the bag, so to speak.
And credit card piranhas?
Yeah, the credit card piranhas are in there. And, you know, you just gotta say whatever sometimes and keep on swimming.
Keep on swimming. Did you have any rough moments when you were doing homework for other classes where you just, like, wanted to slam your head on the desk and then you remembered that the suffering and the trials and tribulations are the thing that's going to deliver you to that goal you're looking for?
Yeah, literally happened to me yesterday. Literally yesterday.
Exact same sort of thing yesterday. It's truly final season. And I've really experienced that as well with sort of my extracurriculars. There's just been a lot going on, and I know it's easy to sort of like forget the bigger picture, to not see the forest for the trees.
Yeah. It's never going to get done if you don't do it.
Joy, what does the Pixie and the Party Grass Boys say? You can't if you don't?
You can't if you don't. You can't ski and party if you don't ski and party.
Exactly. Exactly.
Words to live by.
Now all we have left to do is party.
Let's go.
No. That's right. Shout out to Eldora for being our sick local hill.
Beautiful day. Great day to have a day.
Great day to be alive.
Yeah.
Great day.
Great day to be alive. No, that's over. Sun's still shining when I close my eyes.
Whose song is it?
It's like an old camp song, you know?
Oh, nice.
It's like a good old sing-along. But
you want to sing it for us?
Yeah, sure. It's a great day to be alive. The sun's still shining when I close my eyes. And hard times in the neighborhood. But why can every day be just this good? They almost kicked me out of my church choir when I was a little kid.
I liked it.
I swam
it. I liked
through that,
that
river stuck and I stayed.
Yeah.
To everyone's chagrin.
You stuck the landing.
Yeah.
Made everyone else's problem.
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting to remember sometimes that, like, when you see someone who seems really confident and, like, they're really sure of themselves and make really crack funny jokes and whatever, oftentimes they also have the inner monologue that's like tearing themselves apart that all of us have. So I think it's important to remember that nobody escapes that. And what you just did, singing and then kept on singing,
yeah.
That's how you end up looking really confident, you know?
Thanks.
People are stoked about it.
It could be all a facade or not.
That's right.
A lot of parts of life are a facade. That's the fun of it.
I've really had great results from pretending to be confident.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate.
Yeah. Hey, but yeah. Hey, kid, sometimes that gets you into trouble. Sometimes you, you know, say yes to too many things and how to get back.
Well, or you send it on your skis a little outside your abilities, maybe. Yeah. That can get you into trouble too. So you got to know the like limits and then the limits to your limits, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's always, it's easier to push your limits when you got a friend helping you.
This is true.
On that note, we got to get off this lift. So thanks for joining us, River of Suck Swim Team. This is the River of Suck Ski Team. Woo. And rock keep on. The stoke is real.
Let's go Buffs.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Till next time, keep swimming.